Well, hello, and welcome to this episode of Philosophy Exchange in the series of Artificial Intelligence. Joining us today is Ed Hughes from DeepMind, an organization with a mission to, quote, advance the state of the art in artificial intelligence, unquote. Could you please introduce yourself, Ed, and indicate what led you to have an interest in the field of AI?
Thank you very much for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here. Yes, so I'm Ed Hughes. I have been working with DeepMind for the past 4 years, and I'm a member of the multi-agent team. And before that, I came from a background in theoretical physics. Now, my interest in artificial intelligence, in fact, started much earlier, probably around my childhood, being very excited about robotics, playing with the idea of machines that could do things for me and do things for themselves. And I was lucky enough to have a Nuffield science placement when I was around 17 with Dr. Gary Mathlin at the University of Bath. And we were looking into using neural networks to classify galaxies. And so just to sort of before the big AI revolution hit in the late 2000s, early 2010s, I was coding in Fortran, a very old programming language, neural network learning algorithms. And this piqued my interest, and it sort of just by chance led me to where I am today. So I'm very fortunate in that respect and thankful for that opportunity in particular.
Very good. And we know that you recently have published a work on cooperative artificial intelligence. Now, the paper seeks to assess problems of cooperation in human society and further considers how artificial intelligence might be equipped with capabilities necessary to cooperate and foster cooperation. So kind of with that in mind, maybe I should turn it over to my co-host, Rose, to speak further on that.
Yes. First of all, yeah, I've read your paper, Ed, and I thought it was, you wrote it obviously with a team, but it was a very good paper. So first, I would like to say well done. But second of all, yeah, I just wondered, you know, why are we even talking about cooperative AI? What is so special about this? Why should the public know about this?
Yes, thank you for the kind words, Rose. So I think the natural starting point for this is, why should we care about cooperation in the first place? And I think the reason comes down to the human condition. The ways that we interact in our daily lives on a daily basis are ruled more than any other species by cooperation, and at all scales, from driving on highways, scheduling meetings, working collaboratively with each other, to global challenges like peace, commerce, and a very topical one, pandemic preparedness. And arguably the thing that makes us special, that has allowed us as humans to have the kinds of technologies and the sorts of advancements that we've seen in intelligence over the past 10,000, 50,000 years, has been a process of cultural evolution, which is based on hyper-cooperative instinct. So in that context, if we think about building AI for the benefit of humanity, it seems clear to me that central to that quest should be building AI which can cooperate with humans, which can foster cooperation between humans, and which can advance our cooperative technology to a new level, and thereby bringing benefits for all of humanity.
Yes, okay. And what exactly do you mean with cooperative AI? Well, so you mentioned that they have to, you know, it's essential to be cooperative in our society, AI with humans, but what does that cooperation entail? Is it completely 50-50 cooperation, that, you know, 50% is human, 50% is AI, or how do you envision this?
Yes, it's a very good question, and it's one where we can come at it from several perspectives. So you could imagine, for instance, AI agents with cooperative competence. And I think the best example of this at the moment is self-driving vehicles that are gradually going through these levels of autonomy from level 1 to level 5. And one of the big differences in the higher levels of autonomy is that cooperative competence, the ability to react not only to other vehicles of its own type, but vehicles of other types, and also to humans who might be interacting with it. But away from the notion of an AI agent, we might also think about AI tools to cultivate cooperative dynamics. And a great example of this is the sorts of automated negotiation systems. We already have algorithms that help us to run our auctions or help us to make decisions. And by endowing them with more cooperative intelligence, we're going to make them more effective and also fairer for all of society. And finally, we like to think about using artificial intelligence as a modeling solution. So we might be able to make better models of reality about things like irrigation dilemmas, for example, by building in learning to the framework. And this is, in a sense, taking game theory, which has been an enormously successful framework for thinking about these kind of institutional mechanism design problems, and elevating it by using the power of modern learning methods, particularly deep learning and reinforcement learning is where I have been based in my career, but there's a whole swathe of different AI techniques that could be useful here. And if I may just reiterate this point that in a sense, we're the only reason we're in a good position to be talking about cooperative AI now is because we're standing on the shoulders of giants. We're standing on the shoulders of giants in the AI community who have advanced learning so that we can ingest these huge data sets and that we can really understand human behavior and understand human interaction with agents in a more realistic way than we ever could have imagined 10 years ago. But also giants in the multi-agent community, the sociology community, the economics community, who have provided us with a lot of the models that we need in order to understand how agents could behave in a reputationally positive way, or how they could have a fairer, equitable outcome in interaction with each other.
Yes, because you also mention in your paper the term social intelligence, which you describe as the ability of groups to effectively cooperate to solve the problems they face. Is this something that you're particularly, delving into with your project?
Yes, absolutely. So we are particularly interested at DeepMind in this idea of general intelligence, and it's a zeitgeist which is has been around in the academic mainstream now for at least the past 5 years. And social intelligence is an incredible source of generality because the number of different ways that you can interact with another social being is so enormous. They can change the world in lots of ways. They can do things that you can't predict because they themselves have this hidden information in their brains. And it really explodes the challenge and the opportunity for general intelligence. So one thing we did in the paper was try to codify this and structure this according to the cooperative capabilities which an agent might have. And we came up with four categories, which are understanding, communication, commitment, and institutions. And these can be illustrated quite nicely by considering the example of self-driving cars. So an AI in a self-driving car certainly benefits from understanding, that is understanding the goals, beliefs and capabilities of other drivers, which might include things like the local conventions of which side of the road to drive on. But it might also be things like modelling the beliefs of pedestrians. So does the car understand that the fast walking pedestrian looking at their phone is likely not aware of its presence? And these are quite subtle points from the perspective of AI, but they're also very natural from the perspective of humans. So I think that's a real challenge, but also a real opportunity for learning more about the way that that our neuroscience works in enabling social intelligence. In communication, well, the sorts of communication you could imagine between self-driving cars might coordinate in a more effective way, for example, to convoy or to reduce emissions by driving more efficiently. But again, there are other, perhaps subtler aspects of communication. So will an AI understand the wave of a police officer indicating that the human wants the AI to go through an intersection or wants the AI to stop, where all those waves could be slightly different. So again, a big challenge in communication. The third category is commitment. So cooperative gains are often available to those who are able to be credibly committed. So perhaps a car in busy traffic wants to cross several lanes, and another car might be willing to let it move across, but if just so long as they believe that that car will immediately accelerate and go at the speed in the next lane. And we've all been in that situation in a car where you're not quite sure what the person in front of you is going to do, and that leads to this feeling of danger and may even cause an accident. So constructing these credible commitments and being able to negotiate those in real time with other road users is very important. And then, of course, the fourth category is institutions. And institutions might manifest themselves as better ways of arranging the ways that the vehicles interact on the road. So maybe this is an institution that distributes the self-driving cars across several different road systems in order to improve traffic flow. But it might also include the kinds of institutions that improve communication between humans and AIs in self-driving car situations. So perhaps a self-driving AI has to behave in a particular way in order for humans to understand what it's going to do. And maybe we need to use mechanism design and try some different mechanisms out to figure out what that correct mechanism is, and likely we want to do that before we deploy self-driving cars in large numbers on the roads.
Yes, so I think that's a really good overview, Ed, of some of the capabilities of cooperative AI. So I think that's really helpful. Now, thinking about kind of an example that in this kind of year of recording 2021 is kind of omnipresent COVID-19. You talked about the case of a self-driving vehicle. What about the case of COVID-19 in terms of the same four categories that you mentioned: understanding, communication, commitment, and institutions? Just perhaps a different slant on kind of these same capabilities that you mentioned.
Yeah, it's a great and challenging problem to think about COVID-19. And the first thing I'll say is that I'm by no means an epidemiologist. So I'm not qualified really to offer any practical advice here.
Oops, we got the wrong person.
What I will say is that there is the AI, particularly cooperative AI methods, are opening up a new sort of modeling tool, which might eventually, by building bridges between different fields, yield useful new information to epidemiologists. So the epidemiological studies, as far as I understand them, of COVID-19 are often based on mathematical models. And they may be, some of these models may be agent-based, but they typically don't include a large learning component. And they might not include, for example, explicit modeling of the spatial behavior or the temporal behavior of individual agents. And it seems to me that if you're trying to understand how social distancing, for example, might affect the way that people behave, that will depend enormously on individuals' preferences, the sorts of reputational systems that they have, and the kinds of learning and communications that they receive. And we are excitingly on the cusp of actually being able to sort of offer some of these methods into that space. And there's been an amount of work, some work I was involved in at DeepMind, which was not looking at pandemic preparedness, but was rather looking at supply chains from a mechanism design point of view, to understand whether, as you introduce different mechanisms, maybe you're moving around things geographically, maybe you're changing the ways that you're repairing or upgrading some of your equipment, that might be mediated through learning in some unexpected ways. And we actually found that when we put individuals further apart, so there was more travel needed in a supply chain, in a sense, you could say, an avatar for some kind of social distancing. We found that interestingly, not only did the sort of productivity go down, as you might expect, that this was going to kind of lead to some kind of economic reduction in the amount of product that was delivered, but actually the amount of mutual care between these learning agents increased. We can start to measure some of these variables, which are very difficult to guess, in a sense, as an assumption. It's very difficult to know what a number associated with care should be. We can try to see these as emergent properties. And that's very exciting, because it means that we can get at some of the kind of lower level mechanisms, and we might be able to make better predictions for these in the future. But it's all at a very early stage of this work. And a part of what cooperative AI is all about is getting these people into the room. So finding the philosophers and the epidemiologists and the people who do multi-agent learning and saying, well, what can you provide to each other? And those four will really kind of lift us into the next generation of scientific inquiry in this direction.
Right. So I think that's kind of a broad and helpful overview, Ed, of kind of some of those kind of current day issues that cooperative AI can assist with. Could you speak a little bit more on the idea of AI alignment versus kind of human to human coordination, for example? Kind of machine to machine coordination and preferences? Because when we think about cooperative AI, I think that individuals might have, they might be thinking about AI relating to humans, for example, but there's perhaps a variety of ways in which AI systems can communicate and coordinate with one another.
Absolutely. So AI alignment, in a sense, is already a well-established and very important community. And it, typically, AI alignment is in this little caricature, perhaps. So I hope I don't offend alignment folks here. But typically, one would have a human principle that humans got some preferences, maybe. At least if you're like me, maybe you don't want to have to make lunch every single day because you've been doing it for a year and you always make the same thing. So maybe you quite like the AI to just elicit your preference for what lunch you want made, and then it will go and do it. So it's all about understanding the human's preferences and then trying to get as close as possible in your actions to those preferences. And there's lots of really exciting techniques there, things like inverse reinforcement learning, preference elicitation, and so on and so forth. And I like to think of that as a kind of vertical relationship. You've got the human at the top, and you've got the AI underneath, and the AI is fulfilling that human's wishes. By contrast, cooperation is a horizontal relationship. It typically happens between peers, or it might have some kind of vertical element, but it's rarely purely vertical for humans. So there's cooperation between peers or between siblings, for example. Maybe there's cooperation in an organization with some hierarchy, which might be more of a diagonal kind of line where you probably shouldn't go against what your boss is saying, but you should also be feeding back to them if you really think that they're wrong about something. And so how does AI fit into this? There's various ways it could. So imagine an easy first model is if you have two human principals, each of which have their aligned AIs. And each of the humans says, right, could you just find a meeting time for me with that other human? And those AIs will talk to each other, but now you've got a horizontal relationship between the AIs. So they're going to have to negotiate. And it's not as if any AI is more important than the other AI. They've got to come to a resolution of this. And often these kinds of problems will be problems that we call social dilemmas. They're problems where there's this opportunity for a joint gain, but if one of the individuals really kind of decides to stick it out in one direction, then it will be a bad outcome for both people. So resolving these is going to be really important. But there's also some more kind of complex pictures even than this. So you could imagine, for example, an AI sitting between that horizontal relationship between two humans. Maybe that's a mediator between two companies, or is helping them to devise a contract in a mutually beneficial way. And then really zooming out, if you imagine the whole network of algorithms and humans across the whole world, even as it exists today, it's a really complex kind of 2D picture of these horizontal and vertical relationships, and the relationships that are based on cooperation and the relationships that are based on alignment. And making sense of this and trying to optimize this is, again, a problem where we have to mix in cooperative AI with the AI of alignment to get the best of all worlds.
Right. And I would just like to delve in one more time in the capabilities of the cooperative AI, the four kind of criteria that you mentioned, or the four capabilities. If I zoom into the understanding, I mean, so Carl and I both studied philosophy of AI, and the term understanding is something that we always kind of zoom into, because what exactly do you mean by understanding? I mean, could an AI tool ever really understand? Like, what do you mean by that? And how would you even measure that?
I'll start by telling you an anecdote about this, which is that this one word, I think, occupied probably 10% of the discussions that we had over the course of writing this paper, over the course of a year. And for good reason, because it is a very emotive word. There's a lot of connotations here. We're using understanding in a very particular sense, and the aim here is not to overclaim the space. It's more that it was the best choice out of a bunch of different words that seemed to convey what we wanted to say, which is that an agent has to be cooperative, in a sense, predict something about the world around it, particularly predict something about the other agent's behavior. So that might be understanding what the consequences of its own actions are, really sort of predicting, okay, if I do this, then that will result. But more importantly, it's predicting another individual's behavior. And I think one example that really fascinates me by its simplicity, when you really start to think about it, is why is it that you can go into a shop and buy an item? There's a really complex series of predictions going on there. When you go into the shop and the owner thinks that you are going to give them money for the thing that you have getting out of the shop, there's no police right there that are going to stop you from taking that object. And likewise, when you give the owner the money, you are predicting that they will give you back the right amount of money, and that this outcome will have a kind of positive a positive resolution, despite the fact that actually it's to the mutual benefit of you it's to your benefit if you go away without paying. It's to the benefit of the owner if they take the money and don't give you the item, right? So there's a really complex set of predictions that need to happen there. And of course, then slightly more abstractly, understanding could be the prediction of beliefs or preferences. So taking this away from actions and really going some way back into the neural language that we use. So one question that I often get asked about this is, well, is that really understanding? You know, are we going to kind of prove that this is, in some reductionist sense, we can really get the kernel of understanding there? And in the end, I sort of take what I'd say was quite a purely cooperative AI view, which is, well, if the agent is behaving like it is understanding, then it is understanding. And that's exactly how we judge humans, in fact. We don't understand the neurological bases of understanding. And even if you tried to describe to me what your neurons were doing, I wouldn't think that was a very good explanation of understanding, because I wouldn't understand it myself. So I think being a behaviorist, at least in this small part, is quite useful.
Great. I really like this answer. We had numerous discussions on this, so it's interesting to get your perspective on it. So a further question I had, how do you see, what is the future of cooperative AI? Because you mentioned that, you know, exclusion and coalition could be potential downsides of cooperative AI. What do you mean by that?
Yes. So like any research program, it needs steering. And one of the things that we have tried to do in setting up this notion, if you like, of cooperative AI, releasing it into the world to go and flower and gather momentum, is to define it aspirationally. And I think that means it needs steering particularly strongly. So what I mean by that is that, unlike multi-agent research or economics, these kind of dry descriptive methods of defining a field, a cooperative AI is an aspiration. It's something we can aim for. And it shares that with the term AI itself. It's clear that we're trying to get to something which is artificially intelligent. But of course, with anything aspirational, there's the chance that in creating this new type of technology, that it will have downsides. And I think that it's clear to me, at least, that the types of cognitive ability that you might need in your agents to promote cooperation might also allow things like exclusion or coercion, disruption, and so on and so forth. These are really kind of two sides of the same coin. So an open problem for us in the community is to understand these upsides and downsides and to help us steer cooperative competence to be maximally beneficial. And I like to think of this as in parallel with a framework which has become used in, for example, AI robustness and AI safety to some extent over the past few years, which is something called adversarial examples, which is trying to find the cases where you get the behavior that you don't want as, in a sense, a kind of test that you can then mitigate that behavior. And I think maybe we can start to investigate adversarial examples also in this context. Now, one reason that I'm optimistic about this program have been net beneficial in the long run is that I firmly believe that the sorts of cooperative competencies we are building, the ones which are beneficial, are likely to accumulate. If you and I are better at cooperating, and then a third person comes on and they're better at cooperating, we have a larger cooperative, and then and so on and so forth, and we get more efficient, then that will benefit everyone involved. The types of competencies which have a negative impact are likely to be cancelling each other out. So if you're trying to cooperate, or you're trying to coerce someone in one way and someone else tries to coerce someone in another way, it's likely that nothing much will happen. It's probably not going to advance in as effective a way. And this is the sort of thing that arguably we are seeing at the moment in the lowering of wars and the lowering of conflicts that we're seeing over the past, well, at least hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, that humans are gradually, by likely a process of cultural evolution, building larger and larger cooperative structures, which enable us to self-domesticate, to become more cooperative. And that is a cumulative process, even though at every turn, there are new opportunities for anti-cooperative behavior.
Right. And so you say that cooperative AI is actually an aspiration. Do you think you'll ever, that the world will ever meet the goal? And do you think it is necessary to have cooperative AI in order to create a more peaceful world? Do you think this is essential to, you know, maybe decrease wars in the world? Or do you think it would help?
Yes. To the first question, will we reach cooperative AI? I don't think we necessarily will reach a point where we know we're finished. And the reason for that is that any multi-agent system is in a continual process of finding new equilibria, responding to the dynamics about it, evolving in an open-ended way. And my expectation is, as we start to build the types of technology and the types of intelligence that we would deem cooperative AI, these will percolate into society, and it will be society as a whole, it will be civilization as a whole, that becomes more intelligent. And already we're in the grip of this with our algorithmic world. We've already got cooperation between algorithms and humans. It's just we don't talk about it enough. And I think we're starting to talk about it more. But I think that we won't, it's not the right mental model to think of a cooperative AI that we can go and all go and talk to on a plinth somewhere. It's more cooperative AI as a culture that we're all going to be embedded within, and it's gradually going to become more and more widespread across our lifetimes. Do we need cooperative AI? I've got a lot of faith in humanity. So in my away from my job at DeepMind, I am a musician, I'm a conductor, and I sing in choirs. And I think that is a wonderful example of open-ended cooperation among humans. And I think that it's a kind of, it gives me a perspective that says, well, actually, we don't really need advanced technologies to reach these kinds of immensely cooperative, immensely creative outcomes. Will it help? Well, my contention is yes, certainly it will. If it's done in the right way, then building our understanding, our academic understanding of cooperation, bringing people together from diverse fields so that we can have a mutually beneficial conversation about that academic understanding, and then connecting with industry so that we can provide insight into the sorts of technologies that are likely to be beneficially cooperative, and so that we can build new, hitherto unforeseen technologies that can help us as humans cooperate more effectively. That surely is going to bring us more success as a species and help us to address not only those small scale everyday problems, but also the large scale issues that will define the Anthropocene, things like global warming, pandemic preparedness, and so on and so forth.
Do you think it's inevitable that this is all going to happen, that we have to be making cooperative AI because it's just, we don't have any other options?
I think increasingly the boundary between what we call artificial intelligence and what we define as the broader technological ecosystem around things like a digital economy is blurring. And it's, in fact, it's a well-said aphorism that, you know, artificial intelligence is whatever it is that we haven't found out yet about how to build intelligent algorithms, right? What I have faith in, I suppose, is that humans will continue to develop technologies. They'll continue to develop new memes, new exchanges of new ideas. And I do have faith that the memes which are the most cooperative and the most likely to enhance our cooperative condition are likely to accumulate. So in that sense, I think that whether or not in our lifetimes we arrive at something that we would be happy to call an AI as a community, I think that fascination with cooperation will continue, and either actively or passively, we will be building new cooperative structures, and these new cooperative structures will likely involve components from AI. So in that sense, I think the best we can do to take advantage of this is to bring this out into the open, taking the work of people who've pioneered this field for 30 or 40 years and bring them together into a new community, which broadens the engagement and thereby advances this science in a transparent and beneficial way.
Yes. And now thinking back on kind of melodies, since you mentioned, Ed, that you are a musician, what's been perhaps one or two of the favorite so-called songs that you've sung during your time at DeepMind? What are some of your favorite projects that have gone on that you've seen during your time there?
There's lots of them, so I'm just going to try and pick a couple. But
I'm actually also just curious about your favorite song.
That was what you're going to ask, Carl. And
I thought he was going that way too.
The first thing that came to my mind was that Holst Nunc Dimittis. That amazing. That's what I'd sing right now if I had a group of eight really good singers. I'd sing that. So I'm going to talk. I'm going to talk about two things. One of them is a project that I did with my colleague Natasha Jacques, who's now at Google Brain. And it's about building agents with the capability to do social influence. So agents which in a sense have some kind of basic theory of mind of others and can use that in order to then communicate more effectively and reach more cooperative outcomes. And interestingly, that's now led to a line of work in social intelligence that she's pioneering and which we're also contributing to at DeepMind. And she was one of the main kind of spearheads of some of the panel discussions that we had at Cooperative AI Neurex workshop last December. The other project I'm going to talk about is a project that we had internally, and this is very much a software engineering company type project. It's not a it's not an academic project. It's a project we had in thinking about the way that we document things at the company, and lots of companies think about this. And one thing I really love about DeepMind is that we think in a very collaborative way about the way that we communicate with each other. So in a fast evolving research landscape, we need to constantly be updating our assumptions about the best way to share information. And I was involved in a great project to map all that information that we have about the way that our systems work, about the way that our engineering and our research combined, and then to produce that as a searchable infrastructure for people so that they can better understand and gain intuition about how to navigate the ecosystem of research that moves so fast. And what I like about that is it felt like the opposite kind of from something very maybe arcane in the social influence work, where you're working in a kind of simulated environment and trying to model this in a real world. This felt like using some techniques. They were kind of basic programming techniques, not AI techniques that are, as such, but really understanding how that can have a major impact on the way that humans interact and cooperate. And I think maybe those are the two poles of my experience that I kind of want to combine. That explains maybe where I'm coming from.
Wow, cool. We're going to be rounding off because it's already a quite a long episode now, but we would like to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. I'm sure our listeners enjoyed this episode very much. And to our listeners, if you have any feedback or anything you would like us to do in preceding episodes, please do not hesitate to contact one of us, Carl or myself. And we hope you had a great listen and we'll see you next month.
Thank you very much for having me. Particular thanks also to my collaborators, Alan Darfo and Tori Greipel, who were major powerhouses on the paper. Great pleasure to be here.